This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
.org. Please stay tuned next for Prison Pipeline at 6:30 and at 7 o'clock Hard Knock Radio.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
On Friday, July 19th, from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m., tune in for KBOO's one-day flash drive fundraiser, a day filled with news and music from the equator to Antarctica.
Lecture topics will include climate change, gay rights, and an overview of African land grabs. Don't miss out on the chance to explore underrepresented music and news from across the Southern Hemisphere on July 19th from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Emmanuel Price breathes confidence, and a smile is never far from his lips. He is the founder and current executive director of SCAFE, Second Chances Are for Everyone. SCAFE's mission is to provide community support services to reduce the rate of recidivism by employing, volunteering, encouraging, and empowering men involved in the justice system to become a sustainable part of the community while rebuilding and transforming lives. Emmanuel is currently leading his team in developing key programs and resources to help reduce the number of individuals going back into a life of crime after being released from prison or jail. But there is so much more to his story, as we shall soon see. Tonight is July 15th, 2013, and you are listening to Prison Pipeline here on KBOO Portland 90.7. Thank you very much for joining us as we speak with Emmanuel and learn of SCAFE and his path to where he is today. But first, a word from Mumia Abu Jamal.
The coming acquittal. By the time these words reach you, perhaps it will all be over. It is the Zimmerman trial in Florida. I have no idea what the ratings are for CNN or CNBC, for that matter, but I bet it's pretty elevated for their usual summer viewership. In this place, a prison population, every man with a mouth wants to discuss the case in the chow hall, on the walkways, in the gym, in the yard. Not even the buxom and buxom beauties of love and hip-hop have garnered that much attention. Are you watching the trial? Who do you think is going to win? Can you believe Witness X? Questions bounce like basketballs as all eyes are locked on this, the latest trial of the century, the trial of George Zimmerman for the homicide of 17-year-old Trayvon Martin has snatched a level of public attention that hasn't been seen since the mid-90s. In other words, the O.J. Simpson murder trial. I believe, frankly, that Zimmerman will be acquitted. I may be wrong, but I don't think I am. I've never seen a defense lawyer utilize so skillfully the jiu-jitsu technique of witness flipping. In all honesty, the state's prosecution witnesses became defense witnesses. And where the defense was adroit, the prosecutor bumbled and fumbled. I may be wrong. I hope I'm wrong, but I don't think I am. We shall see. From Imprisoned Nation, this is Mumia Abu Jamal. These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.
And now, Emmanuel Price.
Yes, I am a Portland native, born and raised in Portland, Oregon. Went to Sabin Elementary, Beaumont, and then graduated from Grant. Although I did attend Jeff for a year, but I started at Grant and I finished at Grant. So I'm a general at heart. And been back and forth living in Portland, down south, the East Coast, but I always seem to come back home. So this is where my roots is, where I'm connected to. So it's naturally right for me to be here. I have a family, Northeast Portland, North Portland. A good chunk of my family lives in Portland, but we're also spread out amongst the West Coast and the East Coast also. Graduated from Grant on the honor roll, then I took off to go to Historically Black College University in Richmond, Virginia. So I kind of wanted to get the whole experience of the African-American culture and the fraternities and sororities and see what differences or what it would look like, what it would look like to have all black professors, all black students, and kind of just get the feel for that, of that culture. So yeah, I attended Virginia Union University from 1996 to 1999. And that was one of the best experiences of my life, just to get out there and to meet new people and to learn a different language and a different culture and to be around different African-American people who may have been, you know, Dominican or Jamaican or from, like my roommate, for example, he was from Cape Verde, Africa, which is on the east coast of Africa, the coastline, I believe. So it was good to just see different shades and different variations of African-American people who are all coming together, you know, for education.
And so you were studying business and psychology?
I wanted to, well, on the business side, I wanted to eventually possibly open up my own restaurant or do something with clothing design, you know, fashion design. And then on the psychology aspect, I wanted to be able to figure out how the mind works, what triggers different thoughts and behavioral patterns, and just kind of use that to my advantage, whether it was, you know, whether I was trying to, you know, talk to a young lady and figure her out, or whether I was trying to figure myself out or figure my friends out or figure out the different patterns of thinking and, like I said, behavioral patterns.
Emmanuel Price attended college 3 years and enjoyed every minute of it, as you can tell from the tone of his voice.
You know, going and then coming back to Portland, you know, for summer break or like spring break, but then hightailing it back out there. I fell in love with the East Coast. I'm a West Coast boy at heart, but I have the East Coast je ne sais quoi, I guess, if that's the right word. The hustle and bustle of the East Coast really is, I love it. And the attitude of the people out there is so not West Coast. But me being from the West Coast, I get to experience the best of both worlds and infuse East and West culture together. And I was there for 3 years until 99. And then that's when things took a shift. 1999, I finished my junior year, came back to Portland just, you know, to see my family, work, save some more money, because, you know, senior year was right around the corner and I had, you know, some tuitions to pay and some you know, books to buy and all this other stuff. So when I came home for summer break, just start hanging with some, I mean, old friends. I mean, friends that I have probably not seen in forever. Hanging out with them, drinking and just partying and just doing that in excess without being accountable, basically, for some of the actions that they were doing or some of the actions that I was doing. And because I got so heavily involved in such a short 2 month time frame, I ended up, for lack of a better word, I committed a crime. And during that time, there was sentencing guidelines called Measure 11. So you were going to get sentenced to a mandatory minimum. In my case, the mandatory minimum was, they came to me with 110 months. So I was like, absolutely not. And this was my first offense, never had a juvenile record or anything like that. So, yeah, I ended up getting incarcerated. I plea bargained out and I took a deal for 54 months, which is roughly 4.5 years, a little bit under 5 years. And it just so happened I was a part of a larger crime ring that I had no idea about. I had no clue that the people I had hooked up with and committed a crime with had had previous and prior involvement with the law and had done this several times before. One, I shouldn't have done that anyway. You know, I grew up in a two-parent home, middle-class family in the historic Irvington area. So it was something that I knew better doing at the time. But I can definitely say alcohol and drugs and alcohol play a heavy part in your thinking process. And that was one of the reasons, that was one of the driving forces for me to make such a poor decision, because I wasn't using my full brain capacity. I wasn't using all the tools and all the core beliefs that I was brought up with. All that went out the window. Marijuana and alcohol played a big part in that. It obviously just took my thinking from stellar to not stellar, basically. So I ended up committing the crime. I ended up basically getting locked up for 4.5 years for armed robbery. And one of the conditions was that I would plead to Measure 54, which is work time, good time, which means, you know, I couldn't go to boot camp, but I could work and be good in the correction facility, and they would cut my time in half. Unfortunately, I wasn't that good in a correctional facility. Like, I never been in the penitentiary. So it was being introduced into a whole new world. That's like putting a chicken in a dog cage. Like, that chicken is going to be like, mock? Like, what? Like, what am I, you know, what am I doing here? And either the chicken is going to acclimate to his surroundings or it's going to get ate up. And unfortunately, I had to, you know, acclimate to my surroundings. So I wasn't used to people telling me to shut up and be quiet and go to my cell and just in my face yelling at me and belittling me and treating me like a second class citizen, especially when I knew my worth and I knew my history and I knew what my future held and I knew what type of family I came from, what type of upbringing I had, and how everybody in my family has a degree, whether it's a bachelor's or a master's. So there were some things that were already instilled in me that coming into this new environment and situation, I felt like, who are you to talk to me like that? Though I put myself in that situation, and never not once did I say, oh, woe is me, or play the blame game, because I was just as accountable as everybody else for doing something so stupid. So I didn't really earn all my work time, my good time, because I spent a portion of my time in solitary confinement. And during that whole process of me being incarcerated, it was a time to reflect about, you know, what I wanted for my future. And it was every day I had to reflect on me being there. Like, every day I woke up, like, how did I get here? I was completely sober, had plenty of time to think, plenty of time to read, plenty of time to work out and, you know, just assess everything and, you know, look at my surroundings and see different people that I've known from middle school or high school and wondering where they had been placed to. And this is where everybody from my community ended up. If I hadn't seen them in 5 or 6 years, this is where everybody was. So on one hand, it was extremely disheartening. But on the other hand, it was good to see people that I kind of was familiar with that I knew, though it still hurt me. Like, I was really emotionally damaged by seeing those people in there, but I was glad to see them, if that makes sense. You know, I grew up with two parents and, you know, all that, all those good American things. And a lot of people that I came across in the correctional facility, one, didn't even have that much formal education, or two, didn't grow up in a two-parent home, or didn't grow up with their parents at all. So I had a different experience from some of the other men, but at the same time, I had the same experience because I was right there with them in the penitentiary, locked up. You know, there's no big me's and little you's. Everybody is equal in that sense of being incarcerated. And it sucked because a majority of the people affected by being locked up were Latino and African American. And I'm biracial, so I got, you know, the best of both worlds, being, you know, Dominican and African American. I represented two ethnicities, and I was locked up on both sides of those spectrums, if that makes sense. So I was one person, but I was representing, you know, two different ethnicities. So I don't know. It was just a little bit disheartening because that's all I saw. And when I got out and while I was in doing reading and figuring out the statistics and the ratios and how it's disproportionately higher for African-American or Latino men to be locked up rather than a white or Asian counterpart was pretty much true. And I had no knowledge about this until I actually had a chance to sit down and read and study and talk to different people in there and kind of just form my own frame of thinking and get to the root of what is a problem, which is, you know, mass incarceration.
After a life-changing 4.5 years in prison, Emmanuel was released with a new view on life.
From my perspective and from my lens, my path was extremely bright. My future was bright. Like, I'm back in society. I'm back with my family and friends and different constituents. And this is what I want to do. I'm going to go chase this music dream. So my path and future, I thought was pretty bright. But I got a reality check daily from society or bi-monthly when I applied for jobs that, no, your path is not that bright. You're going to start from ground zero. You're going to have to start to rebuild your trust within the community, within your family, within your friends. You have to build those relationships and persuade people to believe in you, persuade people to trust you. Sometimes it was just ridiculous, but I used all that and I never gave up on myself and on my dreams, and going through that made me stronger to push and strive for things that I felt that were not always within my reach. I maybe could see them and I could reach for them. They may be a little bit higher, but I was still reaching. I was still grasping. I was still chasing after those goals and dreams, whether it was music, whether it was owning my own restaurant, whether it was establishing my own family and getting married, or whether it was just successfully getting off parole and probation. I made sure that I continued to strive and reach for those things because I'm not a quitter. It's going to get done.
When we come back, we'll hear from Emmanuel about pursuing and accomplishing his dreams and founding SCAFE, a nonprofit for helping those who've been through incarceration.
I want to go home, but I ain't got sufficient clothes. Doggone my bad luck, so I ain't got no money and my job's done closed. I would call that old woman, but I'm afraid that she may explode. My wife done quit me, my girlfriend too. Doggone my bad luck soul. I ain't got nobody, and I don't know what to do. They say things will get better, but I don't believe that's true. I thought I had friends, but they all disappeared. Doggone my bad luck, so everything I do, people, everything I do seems to be wrong. It wouldn't be so bad if I knew that I had a home. Disappeared. Doggone my bad luck, soul. Everything I do, people, everything I do seems to be wrong. It wouldn't be so bad if I knew that I had a home. I got put in jail for something I didn't do. Doggone my bad luck, soul. They say things will get better, but I don't believe it's true. I would call it all.
Welcome back. If you are just joining us, you are listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO 90.7 FM here in the Portland area. I'm your host, Peter Pincel, and we are speaking with Emmanuel Price, an individual who's been through the justice system and has gotten out to found his own nonprofit, SCAFE, which he will tell us about now.
So, SCAFE stands for Second Chances Are for Everyone. It's SCAFE.org. SCAFE was created out of my own frustrations because once I returned back to society, like I said, it was hard for people to trust me or to even look beyond my background. So when I went to apply for jobs or apartments or fill out credit card applications, whatever it was, there was always somewhere on that application where I had to check this box to say I've been incarcerated or I have or had a felony background. And I would move back to Virginia to find work. I would move to Atlanta, and it was extremely hard for me to find work in Oregon because of my background was preventing me from doing specific jobs that I knew I could do. So going through different reentry center programs and figuring out how to tweak their program or figuring out what would work best for me. If I had my own nonprofit program, I created SCAFE, and it's basically just a testimony of my struggle and other people's struggles and people before me and after me, and just putting that all together and doing research and collecting different research and data from places like Virginia, Atlanta, D.C., and then Portland, and seeing the comparable differences allowed me to come up with SCAFE. 2012, November 8th, I got my official letter of approval from the IRS to say, yes, I'm an official 501c3.
SCAFE is a 501c3 nonprofit organization.
So we are a reentry resource center. And what we do is we service men in the Portland metro area, in Multnomah County, Oregon, Washington, whoever, whatever guy that we come across that wants a second chance, that wants to transition smoothly into society. We set up an individualized goal plan for each person that enters SCAFE. We have a curriculum where we do a career etiquette, cover letter writing, resume building, how to speak articulately. But out of that, like I said, we individualize each person's goal plan. We offer a range of services. One of our components is volunteer and community engagement, where I go out in the community and I meet with different local businesses and nonprofits and faith-based organizations to see, if they would be willing to let one of the guys come and volunteer and or be a mentor. That way the businesses, they do get free labor. The guys, they get a reference. They get to build up that resume, like make the resume look good and get experience. We have Suited for Success. And so with the Suited for Success, it's just strictly donations of business apparel, slacks, shirts, ties, blazers, so on and so forth, that we take and I get it cleaned up and I give it to the men so they can go to interview and not worry about how they look and kind of just build up their self-confidence. Because if you feel good and you look good, you do good. And self-confidence is extremely important in any transition, whether you have a background or not. If you have low self-confidence or low self-esteem, chances are you're not going to perform well on the basketball court, in the accounting office, in the law firm, whatever avenue of business, you're not going to do that well if you don't feel good. So we want to empower them and make them feel good and reduce that barrier and provide them with suits and ties and business type apparel so they can put their best foot forward and actually giving them a second chance to make a first impression. It's me and my board of directors, and we all basically pull our resources together. When more of money comes in, I could be able to hire some people from the community and even hire some of the men to actually do some of the work themselves and empower them so they can be accountable and earn their own money. But right now it's just word of mouth and volunteers, the community volunteers, and whoever wants to get in and get their hands in a grassroots effort of helping develop and campaign and outreach. That's kind of where we're at with that.
So you'd mentioned only working with people if they want to change. When you sit down with a guy, how do you know if he wants to change? How do you know where he's at?
I'm not a mind reader, but it varies. If they show up. If we set an appointment and they show up on time, yeah, I don't mind if you're 10 or 15 minutes late because sometimes I'm late. But just them showing up and taking responsibility to make an appointment and keep an appointment gives me an idea like, okay, you're somewhat serious. And then as we talk and I do a one-on-one assessment with them, I have them fill out a small intake sheet, you know, what they want and what they need and their future goals and their short-term goals. Most of my interpretation comes from talking to them. I get a sense of who they are, what they are, and what they really want to do by just having a conversation. And that's the part I like the most, is really sitting down with them and talking, whether it's over coffee, and really doing more listening than talking, creating or trying to create that safe space for them and letting them know that, yo, I'm transparent too. I've been through the same turmoil and barrier and all that other, you know, all that other mess. I've been through all that. If I can do it, you can do it too. So just assessing them and really trying to be emphatic with them and really understand them and the process that they are going through, that lets me know how serious they are. And oftentimes people will BS their way through a conversation and just, oh, I want this or I want that. Or they may just lead somebody to listen to them. So sometimes I just shut up and listen, and that helps. Just simple eye contact, just smiling. It's amazing how the littlest things that we don't do or that we take for granted means so much to someone who has probably not had a hug or a handshake or a proper conversation, or who has been ignored the past 5 months because they're a dumb felon, or, you know, just all those stereotypes that come along with being incarcerated.
And if someone's interested in getting involved,
you could reach us. You could reach us at 503-866-6520, or you could reach us at info@scafe.org, info@scafe.org. And or you could go to the website and check out the website and get an idea of what we offer and how you would like to become involved. And that is www.scafescafe.org. And like I said, we're looking for volunteers. We're looking for anybody that wants to get down with the cause and help eradicate recidivism, help empower men. We're looking for mentors. We're looking for businesses to partner with us and stand with us and hire men or even let men volunteer. The best way you can become involved is to be open-minded and to know that second chances are for everyone, and that there are people who are returning to society who just want a second chance to do better. If they're in the justice system or getting out or close to release, I can be contacted through the African American program, and I've also just made a connection at Columbia River Correctional Institution, so they could access my services through there. And I'm still getting out some of my materials to the correctional facilities. Talk to your transitional release person, if I'm saying that right, or talk to your release counselor and just mention SCAFE and tell them that you want to work with this program. This is not a demographically specific program. It's a program for any man. I just so happen to be Black and Latino. But it's a program for everybody, white, black, orange, purple.
Great. Well, thank you very much for sitting for the interview tonight, Emmanuel. Again, this has been Emmanuel Price, involved in the justice system a ways back, now a executive director with SCAFE, a nonprofit 501c3
yes,
that he himself has founded to help men transition back into society, especially as it pertains to employment, one of the biggest obstacles.
For the audience, listen to this and past Prison Pipeline episodes at kboo.fm/Prison Pipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. I want to say thank you again to Emmanuel for sitting with us tonight. Thanks to the engineer, Danielle, for making this all work. And thank you to KBOO. Have a great evening.
And you are listening to KBOO Portland. It is Monday, July 15th, 2013, about 6:59 p.m. Please stay tuned for tonight's broadcast of Hard Knock Radio, followed at 8 p.m. by A Different Nature, followed by Talking Earth, And then Gremlin Time. That's all Monday's programming for this evening, July 15th, 2013. Stay tuned.
On Thursday, July 18th, from 5:30 to 7 p.m., KBOO will be broadcasting the first town hall meeting called by the nonprofit group Article 5 Convention for Our Children's Future on the issue of the national defense budget. Experts on the panel include Dr. Robert Pollan, Dr. Miriam Pemberton, and Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson. Once again, you can tune in on Thursday, July 18th from 5:30 to 7 p.m. on KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor What the Festival, July 26th through 28th, 2013, at Wolf Run Ranch in Oregon. Featuring over 50 electronic and dance artists, including Purity Ring, A-Track, RJD2, and Tycho, as well as on-site art installations, a hookah lounge, and splash pool. That's July 26th through 28th, 2013, at Wolf Run Ranch in Oregon. Tickets on sale now at whatthefestival.com.
We are here tonight to show solidarity with prison strikers at Pelican Bay Correctional Institute in Northern California.
We have the biggest prison system in the world. We have the highest incarceration rates in the world. If we have a section of the population that's that big, that disenfranchised, and is being dehumanized to the extent that they're living in little cells that are 6 by 8 foot, 23 out of 24 hours a day in that cell, we're looking at a situation that's going to be popping off pretty soon here. And I think we're starting to feel the first rumblings of that with this prison strike right now.
On Prison Pipeline, July 22nd, hear the rally at the Portland Justice Center in solidarity with the striking prisoners. That's Prison Pipeline, July 22nd at 6:30 p.m.
2, 3, 4.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.